Weary beyond even groaning aloud, Bail Organa returned from the Senate to the empty solace of his apartment. Voiceprint and a retinal scan verified his identity. The outer door slid open, and as he stepped across the threshold into the apartment's foyer, the lighting came on. "Reduced by a quarter," he said, wincing. The illumination moderated, and he sighed his relief. He unpinned and removed his dark green cloak and slung it across the back of a chair. Then, as he kicked off his boots and stripped off his socks, he called for a playback of any received messages. Just one, his wife, Breha. Bail felt his heart thud, looking at her beautiful hologram face.
"Don't worry, B, nothing's wrong,"
she said, her image flickering, losing its cohesion. Ion storms somewhere between Alderaan and Coruscant. They always played havoc with galactic communications.
"I just wanted you to know that I'm thinking of you. I was watching the Holonet feed from the Senate. You look tired. Are you getting enough sleep? I'll bet you're not. Go to bed, hotshot. I'll try to catch you tomorrow."
She flickered out entirely. Aching for her, unsettled, he wandered barefoot across the deep pile carpet to brood on the extravagant light show that was Coruscant at night. No, the early morning, a time when sane people were in their beds, asleep. 3 days had passed since the Separatist terror attacks, and the city, it seemed, was itself again, more or less. Of course, there'd been some adjustments. The damaged court buildings were still off-limits, under assessment for reconstruction, with current cases on suspension and new cases backing up until replacement judiciary officials were found and sworn in, as well as temporary premises arranged. Which wasn't proving a simple task. Coruscant was such a crowded city. The same problem faced the various government officials who'd survived the attacks but lost their offices. There was an unseemly scramble for desks and holovids and every other kind of equipment. And of course, extra multi-sector security measures had been put in place, devised largely by himself and Padme. Why was it they were the only two members of the security committee who seemed capable of reaching a decision quickly? The rest of the committee appeared paralyzed. The whole Criffing Senate was paralyzed, as though the Separatist success had infected the entire government with inertia. Most of it, anyway. The senators from the worlds on the front lines of the fighting were energetic enough. They railed against Dooku and his allies, railed against the Jedi for failing to rescue them, and looked to the Supreme Chancellor for an instant, bloodless solution. And when Palpatine explained that wars took time to win, and the Jedi were fighting their hardest, when he did what had to be done, impose emergency levies on those worlds to help finance the blightingly expensive counteroffensive against the Separatists, they immediately railed against him. The rest of the senators, from those worlds as yet unaffected, tried to pretend that none of this was happening, and complained that the new security procedures were cramping their style. "I've got a good mind to leave them to their whining and fly home to Breha," Bail thought. But of course he couldn't do that. What would become of the Republic if every senator gave up when the going got tough? Padme wasn't giving up. She railed right back at them, waved her fist in their faces, scolded them for laziness, called them to account. And they listened. How could they ignore her? She was the child queen who'd faced down the Trade Federation and won. She was the senator who'd defied assassins to speak out for peace. She'd fought on Geonosis alongside the Jedi. And she was a close personal friend of Supreme Chancellor Palpatine. So, however reluctantly, they listened to Padme, and, however imperfectly, some things got done. Morose, disconsolate, he turned away from the window and crossed to the wine cabinet. Peace, and a generous helping of fiery Corellian brandy, then, perhaps, he could start to relax. Glass in hand, brandy warmth lingering, he set the bottle on a side table and sank into his favorite chair. He wanted to call Breha, to lose himself in her soft voice and heal his hurts with her smile. But it was mid-morning on Alderaan, and she'd be in the legislate, taking care of their people. Without her, he could never have remained on Coruscant. The welfare of Alderaan was cradled in her hands. "And the welfare of the Republic is cradled in mine," he thought. Well, not only his, although on days like this one it seemed like it. How did Palpatine stand it? How could he bear the desperate hunger of all those planets looking to him for their salvation? A lesser man would have broken long before now. but Palpatine withstood the pressure. In a strange way, he seemed almost to thrive on it, as though being needed gave him the strength to go on. The man was remarkable. I don't know where we'd be without him. He poured himself more brandy. Sipping slowly, he stared again at the unsleeping city. He should eat something. He hadn't eaten for hours, and brandy on an empty stomach was a recipe for disaster. But he was too tired to move. He let his eyes drift closed. He fell gently into sleep. And then startled awake, heart pounding, as the comlink in his tunic's inner pocket, the comlink not even Breha knew about, erupted into insistent beeping.